Somewhere in your office, buried in a desk drawer, there's probably a handbook you received on your first day of work. It contains expense forms and rules about vacations, insurance options, and the company's organizational chart. It has brightly colored graphs describing different healthcare plans, a list of relevant phone numbers, and instructions on how to access your email or enroll in the 401k. Now imagine what you would tell a new colleague who asked for advice about how to succeed at your firm. Your recommendations probably wouldn't contain anything you'd find in the company's handbook. Instead, the tips you would pass along, who is trustworthy, which secretaries have more clout than their bosses, how to manipulate the bureaucracy to get something done, are the habits you rely on every day to survive. If you could somehow diagram all your work habits and the informal power structures, relationships, alliances, and conflicts they represent, and then overlay your diagram with diagrams prepared by your colleagues, it would create a map of your firm's secret hierarchy, a guide to who knows how to make things happen and who never seems to get ahead of the ball. Nelson and Winter's routines, and the truces they make possible, are critical to every kind of business. One study from Utrecht University in the Netherlands, for instance, looked at routines within the world of high fashion. To survive, every fashion designer has to possess some basic skills, creativity, and a flair for haute couture as a start. But that's not enough to succeed. What makes the difference between success or failure are a designer's routines. Whether they have a system for getting Italian broadcloth before wholesalers' stocks sell out, a process for finding the best zipper and button seamstresses, a routine for shipping a dress to a store in 10 days rather than 3 weeks. Fashion is such a complicated business that without the right processes, a new company will get bogged down with logistics. And once that happens, creativity ceases to matter. And which new designers are most likely to have the right habits? The ones who have formed the right truces and found the right alliances. Truces are so important that new fashion labels usually succeed only if they are headed by people who left other fashion companies on good terms. Some might think Nelson and Winter were writing a book on dry economic theory. But what they really produced was a guide to surviving in corporate America. What's more, Nelson and Winter's theories also explain why things went so wrong at Rhode Island Hospital. The hospital had routines that created an uneasy peace between nurses and doctors. The whiteboards, for instance, and the warnings nurses whispered to one another were habits that established a baseline truce. These delicate pacts allowed the organization to function most of the time. But truces are only durable when they create real justice. If a truce is unbalanced, if the peace isn't real, then the routines often fail when they are needed most. The critical issue at Rhode Island Hospital was that the nurses were the only ones giving up power to strike a truce. It was the nurses who double-checked patients' medications and made extra efforts to write clearly on charts. The nurses who absorbed abuse from stressed-out doctors. The nurses who helped separate kind physicians from the despots, so the rest of the staff knew who tolerated operating room suggestions and who would explode if you opened your mouth. The doctors often didn't bother to learn the nurses' names. The doctors were in charge, and we were underlings, one nurse told me. We tucked our tails and survived. The truces at Rhode Island Hospital were one-sided. So at those crucial moments, when, for instance, a surgeon was about to make a hasty incision and a nurse tried to intervene, the routines that could have prevented the accident crumbled, and the wrong side of an 86-year-old man's head was opened up. Some might suggest that the solution is more equitable truces, that if the hospital's leadership did a better job of allocating authority, a healthier balance of power might emerge, and nurses and doctors would be forced into a mutual respect. That's a good start. Unfortunately, it isn't enough. Creating successful organizations isn't just a matter of balancing authority. For an organization to work, leaders must cultivate habits that both create a real and balanced peace, and paradoxically, make it absolutely clear who's in charge.